Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech, big the weekend show from the Bagel Tech Network with me, Ewan Rankin, and we've got a full house, as always. Top left, Kyle Swagger coming in from the Philippines. Hello, mate.
Hello, how are you?
Bright and early, gone 6 o'clock in the morning, so a luxury for you.
It's not bright today, though. It's been raining all night here for some reason.
But you've got that humidity to go with the rain, so it smells like a sauna box.
More or less, yeah.
It seems like your Alex Guinness in... Thank you, Sarah. It seems like your mute switch technique's not working very well. So it seems like you're... I'm not going to do the Alex Guinness, Joe. Stuff it.
Yeah. Doesn't matter anymore.
Nah, it doesn't matter anymore.
Three times, you're out.
Three times,
go ahead.
Three strikes. Next to him, we got Mr. Eric Lanigan from the Twit Network. Hello, mate.
Hey, great to be here.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well now that my internet is back up.
Yeah, no.
Scary couple hours there.
The Comcast creating troubles. Everyone hates Comcast, but everyone goes with them. I never get that, I have to say.
Well, there's no choice. I can tell you that right now. I'm paying $100 a month to Comcast for 20 megabits down, and it's horribly unreliable, but I have no other choice. The only other choice where I live is AT&T DSL, which maxes out at 765 kilobits. So I'm stuck with Comcast.
So it's like Comcast is like the union.
Yeah.
You've got to be with a union, otherwise you get no internet, no.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, bad luck. That's bad news. Closed shops, monopolies and mergers commission, that's what you need. You can have ours because they're crap.
I don't feel so bad over here now.
Sorry?
I don't feel so bad over here now. No, somebody else is paying $100 a month for internet.
For crap. To be offline. The thing is, your country runs on bloody corruption, though, Kyle.
No comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, he doesn't want to be cut off.
A country can't sue me. I ain't scared. Bring it on.
Yeah, I know, but we need Kyle.
Yeah, can't sue me, but can deport me.
North Korea? No, I ain't going to slag them off. No. But Philippines, yeah, they're too small. Too fragmented. Below Eric, we've got our usual droid expert, Mr. Troy King. How you doing, mate?
I'm angry, Ewan.
As always, the man who's got the most rage on the tech podcast network anywhere. What's been irking you this week then, mate?
Actually, my rage this week came at the tip of Kyle, who told me that Apple banned the Android magazine app from the App Store, which is just baseless and cruel.
I find that hard. I mean, I think there's a couple of things that have gone on with a couple of shows talking about hacking iPhones, and their podcasts have been removed from iTunes. With no explanation. So that would perhaps be a good... Oh, and Eric's gone. Maybe Comcast isn't so reliable.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about Comcast. I actually am talking about something on media this week. Do you know that Comcast is considering blocking Netflix?
Really?
Yeah. With the level 3, I think, or something, whoever does their streaming content... for on-demand streaming content. Comcast is having a bit of a fit with it because it requires so much bandwidth and we don't know what to do and it's haggling us down. And I had a little bit of rage on this week's media, honestly. I channeled Troy a little bit for a while.
When did Comcast turn into Queer Eye for the Gay Guy?
That's very authentic.
Okay? But all I know is you just stop your streaming now.
And unless you're predominantly blue on your Skype stream, they're going to cut you off. Which is why Eric disappeared. Hello, mate.
Yeah, I know. You just started talking about Comcast, and then boom, there goes the Comcast customer.
What a service!
Netflix Connect.
You cannot get a better advertisement for Comcast than Eric Lanigan blipping out mid sentence.
Exactly. And actually, if you're going to talk about that later, I do have a little bit of information about the Comcast versus Level 3 dispute.
Oh well, we'll start with that. That's story one then, because don't think this show's planned, dude. Right, and the last but by no means least, she's waited very patiently, crunching on her popcorn and farting in the microphone.
Oi!
It's Sarah.
Oh, what kind of introduction's that?
Sarah Jane Gray, she's the lady that runs the website, keeps us up and running, and is a stunning individual who I give no credit to. I'm sorry.
No comment. I couldn't possibly comment on that.
No, get to grips with that mute switch and it'll improve, I promise you.
Yeah, definitely. I need somebody who knows about technology to help me with this.
No, I was going to ask if you've had a good week, but you're talking about getting 40 megabits a second and the buses haven't been running in your area for 3 days because of the snow. So
yeah, that's I'm staying.
So you've been home.
I'm happy. I'll be happy.
You've had a great week. That's the week I want.
Been working at home for 3 days, solid. Going a bit stir crazy, though.
The week in tech, then. I think the news has been absolutely crap the last few weeks. There's been lots of it this week, but it's all been gadget and gizmos and crap that for Christmas. The stuff that you really want. It's a Santa rich target environment this week.
Tis the season.
Tis the season to peddle crap on the internet. Michael Bay has denied that Transformers 3D is going to be retro shot into 3D. That would be a bad thing, wouldn't it? Your 3D movie's not actually shot in 3D. Tesco started selling the iPad at exactly the same price as the Apple Store. I really don't get why you would want to do that, because given the choice of going to one outlet or the other, you're going to pick the Apple Store. And Angry Birds has made sure that absolutely no work will be done between now and New Year's Day. Because there's a special Christmas edition that's come out bundled with the Halloween edition. Damn those people. I hate them. And of course,
why?
Because I'm not going to get any bloody work done between now and Christmas.
I love it too.
Exactly. And it's multi-platform. We can all sue them.
I know.
For lack of productivity. Git. So, Eric, now you've got something sensible to say. So let's go back to the start and talk about the Comcast versus Netflix issue. You've got some insider info for us.
Well, by insider, that means that I have read a lot of different news sources. So it's not that inside, although I can speak as a Comcast customer, at least to speak to the quality.
At least until the end of the show.
Yeah. So basically here, oh, and I see the person that I just brought it up and just dropped off. So
he mentioned,
what happened to Kyle?
Oh, it's because he mentioned Comcast. He said the C word. This, you don't say the C word on Ustream, and they cut you off.
See, with their deep packet inspection, they're now looking for Skype packets where even the audio just says Comcast, and then boom, you're off.
That's it, you're gone, Eric.
Oh, dude, you're going to fit right in. Libel and slander have never been an issue to this network. Not a chance. Right, so...
Okay, so if you're curious, here's the deal with Comcast and Level 3. Level 3 here in the States is a backbone internet provider. They're a tier one provider, and the story goes that lately they've been trying to that they underbidded for Netflix, the bulk of Netflix streaming traffic, in their attempt to become more of a content distribution network, and that they were Comcast's claim is that they were trying to leverage their power and their ability as a free peering level one network or tier one to get free bandwidth into Comcast customers. That's what Comcast claims. Comcast is saying that they've done nothing wrong, that this is not a net neutrality dispute. And in the meantime, Level 3 went out and said and cried foul of net neutrality, said this is, you know, why we need these higher restrictions. Well, neither of them is entirely right. It does speak, and this is what, and for, there's some information we don't know. One is that, did they say they would block any traffic from Level 3 or just the Netflix traffic? That's the first part about whether it's net neutrality or whether it would actually block the traffic that's en route through Comcast as opposed to just to Comcast customers. The other side of this is it's the reason it's not net neutrality is because if they were to block all of it evenly or just say that it's or just charge a little bit more, then it wouldn't be a net neutrality dispute. But what we know for sure is that it does speak to Comcast's gigantic monopoly, their gigantic power, and there being a lack of competition here that allows them to charge huge amounts for this bandwidth. And they may be extorting Level 3. Some folks are speculating that Comcast could easily just send more traffic their way to compensate for the influx of traffic from the Netflix streaming. But the Comcast instead has decided not to do that, instead just to try to get more and more out of them, which they can do because they own such a huge quantity of last mile end user subscribers.
Are you old enough to remember Soap? It was a TV show on from the States, and it was a Mickey take of Soaps. And it was cool. So you got to look at it up on YouTube. Because the start of it was, they go over the whole story from the previous three series. And then at the end, they say, confused, you will be.
And that's exactly what the case is here. Yeah.
Exactly. That sounds like spinning the biggest pile of bull you ever heard. Not from you. I mean, from the people that are allegedly regulating it. To try and confuse the consumer to make sure that they have absolutely no clue who's to blame. And the fact that actually it's a justifiable issue for them that they're losing service.
Yeah, in fact, one of the arguments against Comcast is that Comcast should be thanking Level 3 for giving them this higher quality of Netflix service, something that Comcast customers, in theory, would want. But, of course, Comcast has their own competing cable TV and on-demand and everything else that they sell that they have reasons that they would not want Netflix traffic to freely fly into the homes.
And not to mention they're buying NBC, too. So you got the whole NBC, Comcast, and Universal team up now.
Oh, hang on. Now we're getting towards it.
So exactly. And that's one of the reasons that Level 3 did what they did and why they're, you know, people are kind of looking at Level 3, raising an eyebrow, saying, maybe you're not the most innocent culprit right here fighting for justice, because they did kind of trump up this claim of net neutrality and did it right at the time when the FCC is looking at net neutrality and is especially looking to decide whether that Comcast-NBC merger should go through. So they may have colored the argument a little bit. However, the argument for increased competition and the need to regulate that stuff is still wide open, and that is really the issue here.
So, Troy, it sounds like this is a perfect handoff to you to give us your thorough opinion on the subject.
If Comcast takes away my beloved Netflix, I will fly to their headquarters and turn those CEO spinal cords into a scarf.
There's a threat if ever I heard it.
I will not be denied my Netflix, blast it.
I think summarized and roughly translated, that is that the consumer is the only person who's going to suffer as a result of this action.
No, exactly. That's always the case.
Exactly.
Yeah. Isn't that always the way?
It is always the case. You know, and it's... Sorry, Troy, go ahead.
Comcast has proven themselves to be greedy bastards, and this is just another case in point.
Dude, you're such a wordsmith.
Thank you.
So... I mean, is the IT, not IT, that sounds really, that makes me sound like I'm 40, which I'm not, I'm older. But the, the whole of the internet provision industry, the ISPs, right the way through to the cell providers, are we saying that they really have got a very tough job here to try and balance the limitations of the bandwidth that's out there for all of them to provide with? Or are we saying they're being... greedy bastards who are taking the cream off the top and keeping the high-end bandwidth and services for the people that are paying through the nose for it, which is going to be businesses, and actually the rough consumer that's out there in the sticks, you know, in Americaville, USA, is going to get the short end of the stick regardless.
Greedy bastards. They're gonna find a way to be more greedy bastards. What's gonna happen here is Comcast is gonna come out and they're gonna say, "All right, so all of you have Netflix. We understand that. So if you would just give us an extra $20 a month, that will be your streaming fee every month. Then you can enjoy unlimited Netflix." You always see this coming. Mm. We used to have unlimited internet for the speed or whatever it was, and then, well, if you need more speed or if you don't want a data cap, you gotta pay more. I'm kind of a bit sick of paying more, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean,
especially in this global economy. I mean, things aren't exactly, you know, the money tree in my backyard kind of wilted up a little bit. So why do they think that they're going to be more prosperous by raising the rates? You're going to have people who say, fine, you're going to charge me more. I'm just going to switch you off altogether. How about that action? Now they've lost, you know, 20 to 30% of their customer base.
Has Middle America.
Sure, they've got higher rates, but fewer customers.
Here's the question then. Has Middle America got the balls to tell Comcast to go shove it?
No, they don't. You know why? Because Middle America, a lot of them just get Comcast. It's like here in the Philippines.
Yes,
we
exactly.
have basically two or three providers to choose from. And then that's it. In the area I'm in, I have two.
Yeah.
And that's what you're stuck with. You've either got slow internet or slower internet. And they don't really care.
And a carrier pigeon's faster than the other one.
Exactly.
You know what they also do here to lock people in is they have these 2 or 3 year contracts where you can't just switch to another person because you're locked into a contract for landline cable and TV service and internet.
I mean, Sarah and I are the UK residents, so in the pile, and I tend to look at our internet provision as actually being a reasonably competitive environment. If I move 3 miles down the road, I've got into a village then, and unless I'm getting a British Telecom line, it gives me no choice really, because every other provider has to come through that British Telecom line. But the area that I currently live in, I've got cable network around here, and there's a lot of places have got access to Virgin as a cable network provider, and that's incredible value with incredible speed, incredible customer services. And actually an awful lot of reliability associated with that. I mean, Sarah, have you got Virgin in your network?
I could have if I wanted to. Yeah. Part of the reason why I haven't considered considering, as I was saying earlier, that I'm just about to get BT at hopefully about 40 meg, but part of the reason why I've not considered going to Virgin is because they're basically NTL, and I have a massive problem with NTL, as they were. But, going back to the issue, I mean, I think, competitively, you know, we moan about it in this country, but you know, you've only got to see what's going on with Kyle in the Philippines and to know how lucky we are, and the fact that we have competition means that it will drive up standards, and unfortunately might drive up prices, but at least it does actually mean that there's, you know, some competition there, which does help.
Well, there's a certain element of what you're saying there where you're almost pointing the third world finger at Kyle, but actually Eric's just described he's actually got less choice.
That's right. I'm sitting here with only Comcast as the only realistic option. The only other option is 700 megabit DSL, which of course is just silly.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this is what I was saying. I mean, I think we are pretty lucky in this country because, you know, we can change quite
now,
easily.
Now, what do you guys do to maintain that competition? I think I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, that in the UK, the providers of the ISPs are required to sell wholesale bandwidth to any ISP that wants it, is that right?
Yeah, BT, who own the copper infrastructure, have been forced to deregulate that so that they can rent that out or lease that out to other ISPs, which does make it easier in some respect. But the only true, completely non-independent is really Virgin, which is cable.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of providers, but they all have to use the BT copper network.
At the moment.
There is some fantastic deals out there. I mean, for £20 a month, so, you know, $32-ish, something like that, but we can get a 24 megabit service with a 30-day cancellation. We're not even locked into a one-year contract for that, which I think is a phenomenal deal.
How many ISPs how many do you have, for example? How many does an average person there have as a choice?
I could switch to any one of 10 tomorrow.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, that's great.
So you guys almost have the same model as we had here in the dial-up days, where it was all just the same. It was everyone used the same copper and was all treated with neutral packets. And and you could just pick from whatever ISP gave you the best competitive price.
But everyone still bought AOL.
Yeah, if you take out the cable, Eric, then yeah, that is very much the case.
Yeah, most definitely.
Except that it's over broadband, but it's still over the same copper.
So there you go.
I always got America Online. I never really got that. Honestly.
So you should feel bad, Eric, because the only thing that you've got there between you and turning to £300 because all you're doing is drinking lattes down at Starbucks is the fact that you've got no competition in a country that's built on principle of competition.
Yeah, I always thought that was kind of weird.
Incredible.
Yep. I know when I lived in the States, and it was okay, right, well, who am I going to use? Is AT&T or US Sprint? And I'm thinking, this is really weird.
Just one or the other.
I mean? You know, it's like, oh, well, I have to choose between two.
And I don't want either. You don't want Comcast, Eric.
Well, but you're exactly right. I mean, what we have now is there under the guise of competition, under the guise of free market competition. Let the compete for the customers. And yet, the way that the internet comes to us through is through cable or DSL, which are two in many cases, monopolies, regulated monopolies. So you either have one telephone company or one cable company. So that's not an actual free market by any means.
Mm.
No.
I mean, I think one of the things that did help is that in the UK, a lot of the ISPs now that are non-BT and Virgin are mobile providers. Mm. And a lot of that was because BT were forced out of the mobile market by regulation. And now they don't have that same level. They can get back into it if they want, but they, of course, you know, there are plenty of companies that now dominate in that area, and so they don't have that level of control.
Has America got the cart before the horse here? Because, I mean, we're sitting talking about net neutrality, and in the explanation that you gave us there, Eric, of the situation with Comcast and Netflix, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of phrases used around the net neutrality issue. But you're never going to get net neutrality until you've got free open competition within the market. Now, I think we're closer to net neutrality than you are. And the last thing that the UK will ever do is net neutrality, because it's all about control. It's all about, you know, having what I have and selling a little bit more to you. Your problem is you want to talk about at the level of the FCC about net neutrality, but there's no infrastructure for net neutrality to even exist, because you're relying on one end of one funnel to get the information that you want.
Well, and that's the irony of the latest. And I don't know if you guys have seen this, but just what was it, yesterday or the day before? The chairman of the FCC said that they're going to vote on net neutrality on December 21st or something. And he laid out, summarized the plan. And people who know what they're talking about say that's not net neutrality. That's a fake. And it's so strange, because this chairman, Julius Genachowski, was just on they just interviewed him on Web 2.0, O'Reilly and those guys. And he was sitting there just saying, like 2 weeks ago, how important net neutrality is and how important it is to protect wireless broadband, and how he puts a lot of faith in wireless broadband to bring competition back to ISPs and all this stuff. And then the plan that he lays out the other day says, well, it does nothing to talk about competition. Neutrality completely, the wireless broadband providers, not at all subjected to net neutrality rules of any kind. All they have to do is disclose. So they can block Skype, they can block Netflix, whatever they want, as long as they put it in their fine print, which is ridiculous. And it still opens the possibility for tiered pricing on wireline broadband, as well as fast lanes and slow lanes and toll roads and just everything that we've always said is what we need net neutrality for. So it's fake, really. It's sort of a compromise that doesn't please anybody.
Definitely. Bad luck.
Right, but whatever happened to that free and open internet so many years ago?
Was it ever? I don't believe it ever was.
I think for a period of time when we were on 90s. Dial-up, when we couldn't do anything.
Go ahead, Troy.
Probably then. Sorry, Troy.
I was
going
to say that I think it was in 1999, I actually found a service that provided me free internet that didn't cost me a dime. It only lasted 3 months, but boy, it was glorious.
Was that net zero?
Nope, it was some random deal. They gave me some configuration deals or whatever, and I dialed in somewhere.
Was that nice?
You know what's funny? Back in the dial-up days, and this was like right at like 98, 99, my grandpa, when he first got on the internet, he somehow ran for like 2 years, never paying a dime for internet access because this is exactly that kind of competition of the dial-up ISPs back then. He could jump from one to the other, like over the course of a year or two on their free trials. He never paid anything for like 2 years. It was crazy.
Good man. There's a guy over here called moneysavingexpert.com, a guy called Martin Lewis, and he's got a website that teaches you how to make a living doing that kind of stuff. How to get the best deals out. Brilliant.
To make a profit back?
Yeah, he makes a fortune out of his website. He's a millionaire now. He's great. But he just says, you know, things like, if you want to buy a ticket from London to Penzance, you're actually better off buying a ticket from London to Southampton and Southampton to Penzance. And it's like the difference is like £270 or something stupid. It's enormous difference.
It's like white hat scamming.
Yeah. This week we saw the magazine from Richard Branson come out, the Project magazine for the iPad only. It looked very nice. I mean, it's got a nice picture of Jeff Bridges on it. It's got the stereotyped kind of fonts along the front with all your major stories highlighted and that kind of thing. I just thought it'd be interesting having a little conversation about whether we think that the magazine is on the tablet is is a goer or is dying a death. You know, because it's one of those things. I got the Wired magazine because it was the first magazine that you had the opportunity to look at, and it was pretty woefully interactive as a you know, even for the first one, there was more available to it at that point in time, and also it was expensive and it was chock full of damn adverts. You know, you're talking about a 70%, 30% split almost from our perception of adverts to content. And as a result, I haven't bought a magazine since. Is the magazine market on the iPad just burgeoning, or is it actually getting off to a really bad start?
I think it's a coming market. I really do. I mean, it is the future, but I think it's very much, it's on embryonic stage and it's got to go through a lot of hoops before it's ready to take off, I think.
Your household's got an iPad, Sarah.
Indeed. Have
you bought a magazine? All right, I wasn't going to accuse you.
That's how I play Angry Birds, though.
I'm not saying you sold your soul to Steve. Have you bought a magazine with it yet?
No. I don't use the iPad very often.
No. I mean, has the person that owns the iPad bought a magazine on it yet?
No.
No, right. Carl, you got an iPad?
Got an iPad, yeah.
Bought a magazine on it yet?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay. Eric?
I do not have an iPad, but I probably would not buy the subscriptions or even one at a time because they're still like $5 an issue for the same magazine that costs $1 in paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the issue here.
And it's far easier to skip past the ads in.
That's right. And a lot of the same articles are available online where you can tweet them, email them to people, share a link, copy text and you know, use it for other purposes, report on it. I mean, I don't like the idea of these closed-in apps or these iPad-specific things, like you said, Richard Branson or Rupert Murdoch are looking to do, where it is so closed, it's limited to one device, the iPad, or possibly just tablets in general, maybe the Galaxy Tab we're talking about. But you can't mail articles to people or send links, and if you don't have an iPad and are a subscriber, you can't see the articles.
ERM. DRM. Sorry.
Yeah.
Troy, have you got a tablet yet?
Like the one sitting behind me?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I got one.
And? No, you, dude, don't you do that to me, because you told me that was a photo frame and not a tablet a few weeks back.
I never said it was a photo frame. No, I don't buy magazines. I don't do the subscription bit.
Ah, humbug.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree with Sarah, though. It's the future. You know, we're getting to that point where, I don't know how many years ago, we said when we got computers and everything, we'd become a paperless society. Well, we have more paper now than ever. But I think we are getting there. We're, with the iPad has helped that along quite well. But Eric's exactly right. Why would you pay $5 for something that you can get $2 on? On the newsstand, it doesn't make any sense. It's the same thing with music. You know, music prices still need to come down for downloads. What was I seeing this week that was ridiculous with music downloads? Oh, it was like a high quality 24-bit remaster of a George Harrison album, right? Okay, well, it's $30 for a download. Now, mind you, yeah, it's supposed to sound fantastic, but it's $30 for files, and I don't get any artwork with it. I can't hold it in my hand. You know, they need to come to realization that what we used to have physically cannot cost more if it's not physical anymore.
Well, see, that's my question. You're saying it's the coming market, but there's four of the five of us have got access to a pad, and only one of us has bought it, and one of us says that even though he's bought it, he wouldn't buy it again. So is it the coming market? I really don't believe it is. I don't know that it's totally the paper issue. I didn't like what I looked at. I wasn't comparing it to the real Wired magazine, because the real Wired magazine's equally full of absolutely crap adverts and minimal content. So,
well, I feel that way, honestly, though, Ewan. I feel that way even about paper magazines. There's many ads now. So many.
So, you know, we're sitting talking about the comparison between the paper and the digital, but actually, both are equally crap. Mm. In terms of, you know, look at Macworld or something like that as a magazine. I used to subscribe to Macworld. And I used to get the article for Andy and Atco at the back because I liked his editorial, and so I liked some of the editorial that was in there as well. But in terms of news, it was a month to 3 months out of date in some cases. Now, these things aren't picking that slack up. These things are not instantaneous. They're not bringing the news to me any faster. Their editorial is no better, and they're charging me the wrong price for it. And actually, when it gets to it, it's not a pleasant viewing experience because I'm scrolling through pages after pages after pages,
and it's worse. Why would you buy a magazine? Why would you buy a magazine, a monthly magazine or whatever, either by subscription or whatever, for news? That's what the net's for.
Everyone did, though.
If I'm going to buy a magazine, I buy it because it's got an article in it I want to read. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a current news item.
Historically, if you look at from the tech world, the monthly magazines were where you got the news before the RSS feed intervened on it.
Oh, I agree.
And I think you'll find that there's a fair few people out there who are consumers. If you're looking at people that subscribe to which magazine or those kind of things, what car, what, you know, what toaster, then they're looking for news, you know, they're gathering news that way. They're not going into RSS feeds. And the thing that really, really kind of hits it for me is we are atypical individuals in terms of the consumer market for technology, and we aren't interested. You know, if we're at the top end of the iceberg, we aren't interested.
But I would be, Ewan, if I could get a magazine that I wanted to buy at the same price with the same accessibility, I have it on the tablet anytime.
And I think this is a case of versus new media versus old media. You got old guys that just knew how to do a printing press, right? And they think, well, let's just stick the same thing on an iPad. People will love this. You know, Murdoch's that way. Oh, they'll love it. You know, look how MySpace worked out. But the thing about it is, though, is they need to get to the DRM DOF, shall we say. They need to have it interactive with Twitter, share it with people, and just giving up the old way of thinking. You've got to have a new way of thinking, a new concept. I don't care about a news article or a magazine on an iPad that's exactly the same experience as it is in the magazine.
Exactly. And that's twice the price. My point.
We will get past that point, I think. But once we do, that's when it will become interesting. Price comes down. More interactivity and the whole sharing bit, because that's the world we live in now. We love to share stuff.
And you get to a point where you haven't got the Murdochs and the Bransons trying to basically introduce DRM or controlling it.
I don't know that it's the DRM thing. I don't think it's the news. I don't think it's the editorial. I think it's the fact that you've got a cutting-edge technology with a very sensitive touchscreen, and the bastards have got me flicking pages.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
We need new blood in the system. We need new blood in the system. You know,
either
really.
Way, the only way we're going to get anywhere is only after a lot of funerals.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying, Troy.
In a way, he's right.
Troy doesn't
way,
know what
he's
saying.
You know, I think
in other words,
the implementation that we've seen right now of magazines on the iPad is not the future. I think it's an intermediate stage. These one app per magazine. I think eventually it's all going to be on the web as HTML5, and I think that's going to benefit the largest amount of consumers. If anything, the iPad may help to bring us back to a paid model, because I believe in paying a little bit for high quality news and information. And I think we've seen how, you know, when you don't have that revenue stream, you lose things like investigative journalism and the quality of fact checking and all that stuff. So paying a little bit is good. And in that sense, I do like how these new things from Richard Branson and Rupert Murdoch are not as expensive as the magazines that we see currently, like Wired and Time on the iPad. They're little bits. They're almost like micropayments. And I think if people get used to paying something but less than the paper price, that may bring back the people being accustomed to paying something for their information. And then hopefully take that to the web and not have it be device or tablet specific.
Yeah, I think the price is the one thing that will draw people back in. But I think the initial applications have turned people off, and I think they've done a lot more damage than they have good in terms of the feasibility and the expansivity of the market. Definitely. The last subject I thought we could have a talk about was jailbreaking.
I love it. Sorry,
we're not allowed to. We can't say the word jailbreaking because we'll get pulled out of the iTunes store. We're not to say jailbreaking
it's
iPhones.
Legal.
Don't say it.
It's legal.
The two cases that are in there was there's a chap Cool. I've lost his bloody name now. I had it a minute ago. Mohammed someone.
Sorry, it's my fault.
Yeah, Mohammed. Mohammed Majed. Mahed. He's got jail time for breaches of the DMCA in 2006. He spent a year in prison so far for it. And yet, 2 days ago, there was an opening statement made at a trial of a person who was hacking Xbox 360s to run hacked games and that kind of stuff. And the federal judge threw it out in 30 minutes. Sorry, threw it out in a very short space of time and had a 30-minute strip down of all of the prosecutors because it was a completely spurious case with serious concerns over the government's compiling of the case. Is your hardware yours?
I bought it.
It should be.
Yes.
It should be.
Should be. I bought it. It's mine. I mean, we even said the federal government, at least the U.S. federal government, said it is okay to jailbreak your phone. It is legal.
That's true.
Right. And the only thing is that, sure, Apple or whoever, Microsoft, they can say if you modify your hardware, that's the end of the warranty. Fine.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that, but you can't throw in Slammer for it.
No, exactly. But I mean, is there any counter argument to the fact that we're all sitting there going, "No, it's mine. I paid for it." Is there anyone that's going to offer any kind of defense of these Muppets?
Not a legitimate one. Not one that you're providing as a consumer and not as a spokesperson for a company.
I'm trying hard, but I'm usually pretty good at playing devil's advocate because kind of sitting in the host seat here, it's my job, but I can't think of one decent argument for why you wouldn't want someone hacking a piece of hardware they bought for themselves. It's like saying, I've sold you a washing machine. I really don't want you tumble dye and your trainers in it, though. Mm-mm. Don't be doing that.
The one thing I would say is that I think you may need to have a demarcation here between hardware and software. Because I don't know how much any of you have read end user license agreements with software, particularly Microsoft ones, but they have some very interesting terms in there about not decompiling and all sorts of stuff and stuff, and that you only have you don't own it, you have a license to use it. So yeah. Where do you think we stand in terms of ownership when it comes to software that runs on these devices?
Well, we've never owned our individual software. It's always just been some kind of a license.
So does that mean that from a point of view that it's okay to jailbreak our hardware, but if that involves doing something with the software which breaks the EULA, that's against the law?
That's where we've got the problem. So are all of these hacks starting from line one in code, or are they all manipulating the existing code of the device? Is there anyone that started, with new code for iPhone?
That would be new code. I mean,
exactly.
If you jailbreak your iPhone, yeah, you've altered the operating system. So
you haven't written new code.
So in which case, you've probably broken the EULA.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So
probably.
that's where they can get you.
So what we're saying is, if you've got yourself your Xbox 360 controller, and just because you're into sadomasochism, you want to super glue a thumbtack on top of the thumb controls, they ain't going to have anything to say about that. No, I've tried that. Don't laugh, Kyle. I've tried it.
You're playing with the hardware, no. So no, I don't think so. Come on, Ewan. You're the legal brain here like me. You know how to think like that. That kind of thing's fine, isn't it? I mean, it's the same if you want to do it with your fridge, for God's sake. It's not going to... The fridge manufacturer aren't going to give them monkeys, are they?
So just like all the things that we've been reporting on associated with DRM and all that kind of stuff as journalists, are we actually saying we're reporting on the wrong issue here?
No.
Yes. No, that's the point. That's exactly what
Sarah's saying.
I don't
want to admit I'm wrong.
No, well, the thing is, when you think about it, when you're jailbreaking, what are you actually jailbreaking?
You're doing nothing to the hardware.
The iPhone is a brick without software.
Yeah.
And a very beautiful one at that.
Well, that's different. I mean, I'm sure I would actually agree with that. I think they are beautiful, and Apple make fantastic, beautiful, beautiful products. But it's completely useless without software.
And okay, so sorry, Ewan. I was going to say. So, what about Android? Is that considered open source?
But that depends on what the end user license agreement is that comes with it from Google.
No one has hacked an Android device, have they? There's no stories about hacking Android devices that I've seen.
Isn't there rooted where you can, you know?
Yeah, you can root them.
Yeah.
Yeah, my old Click, I had it rooted and I flashed a custom ROM because Motorola wasn't updating to 2.1, so the modding community did it for me and they did a fantastic job.
But
this is what I'm talking about. But it's like they don't support the device anymore, but yet it's illegal for me to continue on something that they should have done. Give me a break.
Acting reasonably is a different thing entirely from acting legally, though, isn't it?
I guess, but, you know, it's... But she was screwed.
It's quite an interesting one, because if you say take an iPhone and say, right, okay, well, I'm going to smash the operating system and everything on here, and I'm going to put Android on it. Just supposing for a second that you could do it. Apple could have nothing to say about that, because in terms of the software that's covered by the EULA, you've removed it all. So it's no longer, it's just a brick at that point before you put Android on it. So from a software point of view, providing the Google EULA says that thou shalt not, you know, decompile or whatever, the operating system, fine. You can do what you like with it. Of course, Apple are going to say, no, we're not going to support it anymore. That's perfectly understandable. But from a point of view, all you've actually done is replaced all the software. That's fine. There's nothing in the EULA that could say you won't remove it. I'm sure there's nothing. I don't know. I'm assuming there's nothing in there that says you can't remove it from the iPhone.
They can't.
Neither will
but
we know.
To me, that's perfect. That would be perfectly legal, because you should say you're entitled to do what the hell you like with the hardware because you bought it. The software... different matter, but if you decide to put something else on there, replace it, that's fine.
See, Sarah, that's why we have you on the show, mate, because you're the one that thinks like a programmer.
Well, I'm trying to think with a legal brain.
Very
because
well done.
There is it occurs to me that
I don't actually know whether it is illegal to violate a EULA in and of itself. Is it?
I don't know. I mean,
it's not illegal.
Without having an end user license agreement in front of me for a particular product, I can't say. But in theory, because when you buy software, you don't buy it in the same way you physically buy it when you buy hardware. They normally the software manufacturer will license for you to use it. So and they can impose terms on what you can do with that software, including not decompiling it and blah 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 blah. But with hardware, it's just physical hardware. They cannot put an agreement. There's, you know, consumer legislation that covers the ownership of that. You know, when you know all goods are paid for when it's fully paid for. Blah blah blah. You own it.
I think you've got to be careful
software
here.
It's always been a completely different. Ever since Bill Gates has been around, it's always been a completely different playing field when it comes to, you know, what actually runs on that hardware.
There you go. You heard it here first. It's Bill Gates' fault.
No, he was the first one that changed it because, as far as I understand it, when with IBM, they actually I can't remember exactly what it is, but they used to do it one way, and when Bill Gates came along, he completely changed the way with Microsoft, the way that actually worked.
I think you've got to be careful, Eric, in the way that you use the term illegal, because illegal is anything that's against the provision of law. Well, don't forget that the law is split into two parts. You've got your criminal and your civil elements of that. So in terms of breaking a criminal law in breach of a EULA, no. There's no way that's ever going to be a criminal act. So you're not going to get the police department knocking on your door with a warrant for your arrest for breaching your EULA for your iPhone, I hope. There is one case we are talking about, Steve Jobs. So.
And there is one case when you would do if the EULA says that you shall not copy this software, that's piracy. That is criminal.
Piracy is not a criminal offence.
Oh, I thought it was.
No. You've got to bear in mind that the law can't deal with anything that's not tangible, and information's not tangible. So,
actually thought piracy was criminal.
No, it's not.
Tell that to the people of the Pirate Bay.
But that's that. What you've got there is an entirely different country from the two legal systems that we're talking about in terms of the US and the UK. In both the US and the UK, it's impossible to steal information. I can have you prosecuted for stealing the piece of paper that the information's on, because that's a tangible product that has been stolen.
That's hardware.
I have intention to permanently deprive you. Tell me your mother's Christian name, Eric.
Wait, Christian name. What is it? Which one is that?
Her first name.
Bridget.
Bridget. Okay. So I've deprived permanently Eric of the knowledge of the name of his mother.
How did you do that?
There you go. Now, if you think hard of a number, you can't remember the name of your mother. That's absolute rubbish. I can't permanently deprive him of the information that he holds. He can spread that information to me, or I can get him by whatever means I want to tell me that information, but I can't steal it.
Well, you did sign the EULA, so you have a license to know my mother's birth.
So,
what about if the information is only in one place, Ewan?
We're in a different situation. Just hang on a second, because otherwise we're going to get confused. We're talking about the criminal element of this.
I'm already confused.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about the criminal element, the piece where the police turn up and say, little pig, let me in. Now, that is never going to happen with information. It cannot happen because the prosecutors cannot prosecute for stealing of information because you can't steal it. There is no permanent deprivation. If I take away the bits and bytes of that movie, the owner of that movie still has the bits and bytes. I've just copied them. Well, copy them is a breach of civil law because they gave it to me under a license, which is a civil agreement. And in the purchasing of that item, I have a civil agreement not to do anything wrong with it. And if I breach that civil agreement, that contract, then they can pursue me for damages associated with that contract.
So well, how does that differ than if I say, right, okay, well, I've written this piece of software and I've got three backups which sit on disks, on CDs next to the computer, and somebody comes along and steals the disk and the copies, so therefore has deprived me of all copies of that?
No, you can only have them prosecuted by the state and imprisoned for the theft of the disks. And if you
though I don't have a copy of it.
Yeah. If you want to show that they've deprived you of a monetary value through the theft, you can sue them for the loss of the information.
Right.
But you would never get them prosecuted for the loss of information.
It would be a consequential loss.
That would be it. And that's the point where the legislation goes the wrong way.
Sorry, when we're talking about jailbreaking of phones, though, at least here in the United States, the thing that originally caused you not why it was illegal, you know, to jailbreak an iPhone is that you were circumventing copy protection. Now, only in the last couple of months, I think it was like July or something, the Librarian of Congress added the provision to the DMCA that said that you can jailbreak these devices and that would not be a violation of the DMCA. But prior to that, it wasn't so much violating the EULA as breaking copy protection.
Yeah, but it was probably the copy protection, which was the legal aspect of that was in the EULA, which said thou shalt not break the copy protection.
The DMCA
it's actually the DMCA itself, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It makes it illegal to circumvent or crack any kind of digital rights.
But it's cut off by some form of legal agreement. Okay.
Now let's be careful here. Your government will pass legislation for the prosecution of wrongdoers and the removal of those wrongdoers from society, so either by fines and imprisonment, and that's it. They will also pass legislation which assists in the process of civil actions. The DMCA has never been enforced by a criminal agency. It is there to assist people in rectifying the civil action, because what happens is people give you a DMCA takedown notice. They're saying, if you don't take this down according to this act, I will sue you. And the act is helping me say I can sue you. And the act will be used in evidence against you when I sue you. But it's still no criminal prosecution that's going to come from it. It's a different thing entirely. There's lots of, if you look at the Consumer Protection Act here in the UK, the first part of the Consumer Protection Act enables the state to be able to prosecute individuals who are misguiding and misrepresenting themselves and committing fraudulent activity through consumer protection. But the second part is only there to try and help people who have had machines, etc., that have gone wrong, and they've gone back to the shop and the shop says, get stuffed, I'm not going to solve the problem for you. It's a civil process piece of legislation, and that's what the DMCA is. It's not criminal legislation.
But you can be jailed for violating copyright.
No, you can't.
Isn't it like $250,000 or up to 5 years in prison or something
like that? Years in prison, right. Exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right, Eric. It's $250,000 fine or up to 5 years in prison. That's exactly right.
I will try, while we're doing cool thingy, I will try and find one prosecution for a breach of the DMCA. There you go. There's my challenge. And I shall report back at the end of cool thingy. If I can find one. I'll gladly be wrong. I mean, it's not like it's...
No, it's because that's the Xbox thing. That's the Xbox modder guy, wasn't it? They said he might go to jail for that.
Yeah, because that was the difference there was he was using stolen material. He got a stolen piece of hardware. But it got thrown out because it wasn't good enough.
So it's funny to me, Ewan, and just to kind of summarize here, we're all tech journalists, right? So we understand a little bit things. Obviously, you understand the law quite a bit. What about the average consumer? This is so damn confusing. I mean, when I hear the government tell me it's legal to jailbreak your phone, shouldn't that be enough? I mean, my God, does it need to be that complicated? Do we need fine print in our daily lives for something that I legally purchased?
If you gave the iPhone 4 to the people that make the laws in your country, mate, you would probably find they may hold it upside down or the wrong way around. That's where your problem comes.
It's just ridiculous.
This may be relevant. Sorry, this is Ars Technica talking about the Xbox thing. It says this was the nation's first jury trial to test the DMCA as applied to game consoles. The law makes it a crime to offer a product or service that circumvents a technological measure designed to protect copyright material. Each of the two charges carried a maximum of 5 years.
That's black and white.
That is pretty black and white, isn't it? That's not what I thought the DMCA was written for, though.
Yeah, I must admit, when I was talking about it earlier, I kind of forgotten about that.
And don't forget, I wasn't aware
about the DMCA.
Don't forget, Eric, that it got thrown out.
Well, that's right. For the game console issue, I don't know if it's been the case for other matters like that. I mean, this is obviously a different country, but Pirate Bay in Sweden, they're being jailed for helping to violate copyrights.
And that's in Sweden.
but you've got to... Well, hang on a second, because now have you all watched the dragon thing? The girl with the dragon tattoo?
No.
Right.
No.
The guy I'm not giving anything away in the plot line here. The guy that's the centre of the story, the journalist, is given 3 months in prison for libel. Now, libel is purely a civil... action. It's the state intervening again to bolster the punishment. So he was sued and lost money, and he was given a prison sentence. Now, I don't know in the story whether he's given the prison sentence because he can't pay the losses, and the Swedish legal system may work entirely differently. So again, you've got the very blurred line between where your state intervenes to reinforce civil law as opposed to just acting in itself. I've just Googled DMCA prosecutions, and I can't find in the first page anything that's been settled.
What about four pages down?
Well, that's what I said. I'll go through while we're doing cool thingy. But the other thing as well, you've got to remember, you can pass all the legislation you want. It means absolutely nothing until your judicial process has said, yes, it was passed correctly. Unless you go first case, it's a waste of time. Absolute waste of time. Thank God for the balance of the judiciary and the legislature. Let's do cool thingy then. So, Kyle, have you got a cool thingy?
Yeah, I do. Actually, this is something I know that we've said on the show before, but I have to just bring it up again, and it's Audacity. I love Audacity. Saved my bacon earlier because I had a noise on a podcast that I just couldn't get rid of it. And amazingly enough, I could not get rid of it with Adobe Audition. And I did a little Googling, and I said, oh, try Audacity, you know, highlight this place. And you can kind of basically take that little clip there of that noise that you wanted to get rid of, apply it, and it took it right out. It's free. It's effective. I love it. Audacity. That's my pick.
I think the only thing with Audacity that tends to annoy you is having to use the lame encoder and things like that for export, isn't it? You'd love that to be built right in there, but...
That would be nice, yeah. But I mean, it just exported it to Wave anyways, and it was, Audacity is a great free program out there. So if anybody, if for just getting rid of annoying noises on your recordings, it worked excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. And it's available for Windows and Linux as well.
Yeah, superb.
And Mac.
Yeah, I used to do theatre sound for a local theatre, and I used it for so many different shows, for different things, mixing sounds, slicing and dicing, all sorts of stuff. It's just absolutely brilliant.
Mm. Jolly good. Excellent stuff. Do you want us to come back to you? Erica, have you managed to get us?
Oh, I've got one.
Good man.
I've got the cool thing that I like is a free thing called Mail Unread Menu. This is it puts the unread count, if you use Apple Mail, up in your menu bar. And the reason that this is great and that I found it recently is because I got a 11-inch MacBook Air and I'm trying to find ways to get rid of the dock to hide it down there and maximize my vertical screen viewing. And so I noticed that one of the things I often looked to the dock for was to see how many unread messages I have. Well, now it's up in the menu bar and it's totally free. And it's also really cool because it's very customizable. You can choose, for instance, to have it go red, like in a little red circle with the number, if the messages are both unread and unseen by you, and gray with the number if you've seen the messages but then marked them unread to go back to them later. And the fastest way to find that is just Google Mail Unread Menu, three words, because the URL to the site is complicated.
I always judge cool thingies by how fast I download and install them. Done.
Awesome. Well, that's because you got 50 megabit internet, so stop rubbing it in.
Oh yeah, I forgot that.
Oh, I'll do that in 2 weeks' time then, Kyle.
I've just downloaded and installed it. I'd never heard of that before. I've gone to a Doug script and all those kind of things, but this is a little package, isn't it, that you get from the website. LoganRockmore.com, a mail unread menu. There you go. That's it. Superb. We like free. Good pick, mate. Excellent pick. Troy, have you got a cool thingy for us? Are we going to play the jingle or not?
Absolutely, of course. Why
it's,
not?
It's going to be an Android app, right? Hang on a second. I've got to find a thing. I was really prepared for this, wasn't I? All right.
I promise I won't sing.
Don't you dare.
I thought you were all prepared.
I cannot speak for Sarah, though.
I'll tell you what, Kyle, should we improvise?
No.
I want to stay on Ewan's good side. No. Christmas is coming up.
Christmas is coming, and he thinks
I like
he's
winding him
present.
Up.
Yeah.
Troy King's Android app.
Yeah.
This week, my Android.
I've got to wait for the week where I play that damn thing and you don't have an Android application.
Yeah.
Sorry, Matt. Go ahead.
My app this week is the brightness toggle widget, where it takes up one square on your home screen and allows you to just cycle through different brightness levels. So if you need it brighter, a couple taps, screen's brighter, then you need to turn it down a little bit, a couple taps, it's turned down. Saves you from having to go through the settings, display options, all that stuff. So it's just a really nice, convenient app that lets you quickly and easily adjust the brightness of your screen.
Now, does Android have, like the iPhone, you know, it'll sample your environment and it'll dim or raise the screen brightness depending on your ambient light around or not?
Yeah, it does. But sometimes
so you can override that, though.
I want it a little bit brighter or a little bit dimmer, just my preference. And the widget helps you kind of, you know, control that yourself.
Yeah. Free, available from appbrain.com. If you go in there and have a look at it, it looks pretty good. It looks really good. I like those ideas of, you know, you love the functionality of OSs when they do things for you, but you like that ability to be able to switch them off. That really helps sometimes, rather than being stuck with the something that Uncle Steve wants you to do or Google want you to do. Eric, Sarah,
right?
Have you got a cool thingy?
I do. It's something I actually found out about today. It's a audio conferencing service called Powwow Now. Don't know if any of you have come across it in the past, but I had reason to do a conference call this afternoon and we were having some difficulties with it, and one of my colleagues actually suggested this. And the way it works is you can actually use it immediately. The way they make their money is that they use different types of phone numbers, like 0870, 0844, depending on the level of subscription that you go for. And apart from that, there's it just gives you a PIN number, and everyone just dials into that number, and you give everyone the PIN number, and then you're talking to each other. Now, if you can get an instant PIN number, and if you do that, everyone's used. This is in the UK. Everyone uses an 0870 number, but if you register, everyone will be able to use an 0844 number. Oh. And they've also got a subscription service that allows you to do it to allow you to use 0800 numbers, and also for international callers as well.
Excellent, excellent.
So, yeah, I must admit, I was quite impressed. It did work really well. We had just over an hour conference call, and it worked really well.
How much is the subscription service?
I haven't looked at it because we just used it for the one-off at the time. But from what I think it might be not be very much. There's a open access service, which is the instant one, and then there's an enhanced and premium. The premium, I think you have to use the premium one to get the 0800 number. Mm. But I haven't actually looked at it. I was saying something like £2.58 for the person that's actually organising the call.
Brilliant. And dead simple at powwownow.co.uk.
Yeah. And I notice also there seems to be a US one, so it's probably UK is the UK arm of a probably US company.
Not to be confused.
I don't know if you've come across it, Eric.
I'm sorry, I was looking up the DMCA stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, don't worry.
Damn, I'm going to find a case before we're finished.
Yeah,
that's all right.
It's on page 443.
The tenacious.
You got there for him.
The tenacious journalist. Well done, mate.
Well, I am finding that at least on Wikipedia and EFF and other sites, they're saying that the DMC does include criminal prosecution provision and jail time. They keep using the word criminal and criminalize. If that helps, because I have to admit, you totally threw me about the whole criminal versus civil law thing. I had not looked into that or noticed the difference between that before. But I do think, at least in the U.S., copyright infringement and the DMCA is very jailable, and I believe it is criminal just because they always say it's a crime. Am I thinking the right way there? I don't know.
The problem that you've got is, as you said there at the start, you used the word illegal. And a lot of people use that word and don't actually think about whether they're referring to an illegality associated with civil law or an illegality associated with criminal law. And it's important to quantify those two, because the line where criminal and civil law blur over is enormous. You know, if you look in England, if you commit murder, that's not a criminal offence.
It's common law, isn't it?
Now, the eyebrows have gone up because you're like, really? You guys just walk around murdering each other? The answer's no, we don't. But the difference is it's a breach of tort against the person, but it's actually prosecuted through the criminal practices. So it's a common law breach.
It's still under common law, isn't it, Ewan?
That's right. It's a common law breach which is prosecuted in the criminal courts. So equally, you can have a statute breach which is actually sued for in the civil courts. It crosses over both ways. It's not a straight line where the acts that you pass result in criminal prosecutions. Some laws do both. They cross over incredibly badly and incredibly well, because what the state does is it tries to support the little guy in the civil fight.
It's like you can have a civil case, and if you tell a lie under oath, that's a criminal offence.
Yes. There you go. So
I think go ahead.
Sorry, Kyle. Let me just finish. The DMCA has been used extensively in the civil activity, but to my knowledge, there's never been a criminal activity that's actually succeeded with it. Unless you can say somewhere that references that actually puts in a reference to a criminal case that's actually worked, I'd be surprised if it's actually that effective. Because it's oriented towards a civil discipline in terms of copyright. We've got a thing over here at the moment called the Corporate Manslaughter Bill, which is if a company has got a worker who dies whilst working for that company, the individuals who are the operating partners or directors of that firm can be personally prosecuted for that death.
Oh, wow.
And that's been coming for 10 years now, and they finally got it in 3 years ago. There's still never been a successful prosecution using it.
Yeah, there was a number of attempts, wasn't there?
Yeah, because it uses two phrases, recklessness, and it uses the word intention. And the test for intention in British law, there is 8 stages to that test to make it actually stick. It's going to be nearly impossible to make it work. I could see the corporate manslaughter bill never actually getting a prosecution which stands up to an appeal. It's a very important thing to understand that your legislature does one thing, your judiciary vets that legislature, and more often than not, the two are at odds with each other.
Yeah, particularly in the UK when you bring into a EU law as well.
Oh, don't get me started on the European Union. Good God.
Well, all I know is what I've learned from today's show is that when I go buy a cell phone or I'm going to go buy a piece of software, I'm just going to already think of myself as a criminal. That way I don't feel bad anymore.
Good lad.
I think this is becoming more about law than about tech, isn't it?
Well, it's tech law. It's tech law. There we go.
Yeah, it's tech law.
The other thing, dude, is
which is interesting.
Just take it home and look it under your bed sheets with a flashlight, and then no one will know. Who cares?
There you go. Hope you feel better at the end of the day.
My cool thingy is the glyph. It's a fantastic looking little thing. I picked this out as a story for Bagel Photo today, and we didn't use it in the end as a story, but it's a fantastic little device that works as a little device that will hold up your iPhone so you can watch it on the train or you can watch it on the plane, something like that. It clamps on the front and it creates like a little third tripod leg. But the beauty is as well, and you can just see in the picture that I've just thrown up there on the video feed, it's actually got a little tiny threaded nut on the underside that actually clips it and fixes it to your tripod. So your standard tripod or monopod will get this, and then you can just see where the leg is. You slide your iPhone into that, and actually you've got a tripod mount for your iPhone. So if you're into taking HDR photographs and that kind of stuff with your iPhone, this is the thing for you. It's $20. Now, they've had such a demand. These guys that invented this got paid $140,000 in advance to progress the design. And the demand has been quite high. They're not promising that you're going to get yours before Christmas. They've had that many.
It looks
orders. Pretty
cool. Does it work if you have a case or a bumper?
No, I don't think it does. If you look at the slot there, the slot looks pretty much like it's the same size as the iPhone itself.
Is that the tripod mount on the underside of the on that picture, Ewan? Is that on the bit that's on the immediate underside of the iPhone?
Yeah, I mean, if you Google glyph, G-L-I-F, you'll see the picture that we're referring to here. Okay. So for the audio listeners, but effectively, yes, your 3/8 screw fit is on the underside there. You pull it out, slide it in, spin it on your tripod or your monopod, and away you go.
Cool.
For $20, I thought that was a really good buy. It's not free. It's awfully sorry and all that. But. Right. Thank you very much. The last word goes to our sponsors, of course, UK2.net. They are the people that give us all of the bandwidth for the shows, and we're running out of that yet again. They've given us a virtual server, private server. That free of charge, because we were starting to wreck the server that we were on. Awfully sorry to everyone else that was sharing that one with us. And they look after us incredibly. They are a great company for providing domain names. They'll do e-commerce, anything like that, web hosting. Give them a go. In terms of price, you'll probably find that dollar to pound ratio or even the local currency where you're listening, they'll be pretty good. They're quite competitive. And if you go to our webpage, please go to bageltechnews.com first and click on the UK2 logo there, because that'll take you through a little tracking code that will tell them that you've bought because you listened to us, or you viewed them because you listened to us. And they get quite a few clicks each week, so we're very flattered. Thank you to those people that make the click. There's lots of you that do it. Just go to the webpage, make the click, and if you feel like buying, please go ahead and do it. And the other people that support us is a local firm here in the UK called DCS Cabling. They provide you with fantastic data and security solutions. They'll wire your house for copper. They will give you an alarm system that interfaces with your iPhone so you can monitor it. You can look at all the cameras that you've got because of the iPhone. And you can even set the alarm system and switch it on and off using your iPhone. They're a stunning bunch of lads. And if you go and use the click through on our homepage again, when you place your order, get the quote from them, then say, and I listen to you through Bagel Tech News, they'll give you 10% off your first order with them. So well worth it. If you're buying enough kit, that could be a really good kind of discount. So thanks very much, to DCS cabling and to UK2.net, because this network would not exist without them. We'd be absolutely broke. House payments would be used for the bandwidth that we suck up. Thank you very much. Right. Final bit then. Where can we get a hold of you, Kyle?
BagelTech Media podcast, BagelTechMedia.com for that. Twice a week. Usually it's posted on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And you can also check us, actually me and you went out on BagelTech Photo along with Alex. That's every Friday? 11?
Yeah, do it live-ish. Live on Friday on at 11 o'clock, and then it kind of hits the servers by Monday if we can get the editing done. Depends how many times we forget that we can't swear.
and then a couple of times a week, of course, doing the filling in for you a bit, Ewan, with the daily podcast, which I quite enjoyed this week, to be honest.
Good man.
And then Twitter.com/KyleSwagger. Swagger with one G only.
A lot of editing this week in the BagelTech Photo Show because, of course, Mr. Fox's plumber was calling round, and that's not a euphemism for something sexual. He actually had a plumber calling round to try and fix his old boiler. That's not come out right at all, has it? No.
That's not a euphemism either, is it?
Mario and Luigi, never reliable.
Yeah. Eric, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
That would be twitter.com/EricLanigan, EricLanigan.
Jolly good. Anywhere else?
I'm sorry?
That's it? Just nowhere else?
Oh, and EricLanigan.com.
Did you just, when you didn't hear me, did you just tilt your ear to the microphone?
Yeah. And I realized as I did that made no sense at all.
Good man. It's all right. I figure at this point you're like a rabbit in the headlamps and you're thinking, thank God this is over. What the hell did I come on here for? These guys are Muppets.
This was fun.
No, the thing is we pride ourselves that we know nothing. We're a consumer show, not a tech show. And Troy, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
You can find me over at BagelTechRage.com and BagelTechDroid.com, also on Twitter at said show names, and do shows every Tuesday and Friday.
The angriest man in tech with the most passive voice you've ever heard.
It's about the sarcasm, Ewan, and good the man. Rage behind the it's calm voice.
The rage behind the sarcasm.
The dry wit.
Exactly. I hope to hear from you later, mate. Droid Show's going well, mate. I had a little catch up this week in the car, and I listened to three of the last three episodes. So I finally think I'm caught up now.
Good, thank you.
And Sarah, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me at my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
Jolly good. We'll be back again every day next week with the BagelTech news show. So that's Monday to Friday, 5 minutes, catching you up on the previous 24 hours technology news as normal. Three shows from me, two shows from Kyle. Santa will be there every day as well with his crap for Christmas. And there'll be essential purchasing things there for the people that you hate the most. And as you've heard from Kyle and Troy, we've got the other shows we'll be linking out with BagelTech Media, BagelTech Rage, and Droid will be there, and BagelTech Photo as well. And the big show, that's us, will be back live on Friday at 10 p.m. UK time, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 2 p.m. Pacific. The other thing that I've been told, we've got Will Green coming on, because we're starting the Mac show, hopefully, just over the Christmas period. We might try and do the first one. And I said to him, how do you grow in iTunes? He said, reviews. So if anyone can get out there, can give us a review in iTunes. Not a lot of the new feeds since we swapped over from the old website have got reviews on them. Really appreciate it. It makes a difference to our rankings. And thanks to everyone who's downloaded the recent episode for iOS 4.2, because we are the number one podcast in the tech news category in iTunes this week. Thank you very much. Have a good week. See you next week.